That was some grunge light. Here at The Wizard, this is WZRD Chicago, 88.3 FM on your radio dial. I have with me, and your mic is on, Mitchell Spanzik from an ally in the fight for internet freedom, and among other things. So, Mitchell, hey, how you doing?
Hello, Wizardress, how are you doing? It's good. Long time no see. It's been a while, hasn't it?
I know. It's just been so crazy, cuckoo bananas in my life. How about you?
Oh, the usual.
Yeah, well, okay, great. So let's get started. We got a lot to talk about because we've got a lot of catching up to do. You were going to give us, all eight listeners, that's my joke. I'm pretty sure there's more than eight listeners. There's got to be at least 10 people listening right now. maybe more. There is some updates in the net neutrality debate. I haven't really been following it after we made that one little small victory. It's gone to the FCC. The FCC is taking it under advisement, but lots of things are happening in the intervening time. So what's new with that?
The FCC actually approved what most in the internet freedom fighting community were and I was fighting for. What we were fighting for and won back in February 2015 was a reclassification of the internet into a legal framework that actually made its long-term safeguarding a lot more feasible and a lot more strong to be able to withstand court scrutiny. This had been the big change that was actually done all the way back in 2002, where its previous legal framework was changed into something that would leave it a lot more hobbled and a lot more vulnerable to legal challenge and to challenges of all kinds. And that was after a fight that lasted the better part of a decade. I myself had been working on the issue for the better part of 9 years before our final victory in February 2015. Where the FCC in February 2015, by a 3-2 vote, voted to reclassify the internet as within a framework that made it a lot more amenable to public service protections. Shortly thereafter, right around June or so, to the surprise of absolutely no one paying attention to this, corporations that are looking to basically monetize the internet to their gain sued the FCC in trying to challenge this this legal framework regarding net neutrality in the courts. And this is, the question was not whether or not they were going to sue. They were going to sue. In fact, they had actually sued twice before in the last two times the FCC had sought to implement and enshrine net neutrality as a policy. The last two times they failed, the FCC failed, and the opponents, the big corporate ISPs, the big three are Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T, had taken turns to sue the FCC and had each won twice over. The third time is actually underway, or at least under court review now. The arguments were heard in September by both the FCC as well as allies of the FCC, including a fair number of organizations that have been working on media freedom, media justice, and internet freedom and technology issues, actually sided with the FCC because they felt, as do I, that the FCC did a good thing in their changing of this legal framework. The forces of evil, the big corporations that were at play here, unsurprisingly sued. All neutral observers, and in fact, actually, even observers on both sides of the divide here, had actually observed that the FCC is probably going to win their lawsuit. They will be able to maintain the net neutrality protections, at least to a great extent. Whether or not there may be like little bits and pieces here and there that might not yet be, that might have gotten challenged or maybe overturned in whatever the court rules down. The court here being the First Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. which has been challenging, which is the main framework for challenges of this sort. And the FCC is probably going to win. We have not yet heard an announcement from the court as to how they are going to rule. And that's what's kind of, that kind of surprises me. I actually thought that there was going to be a ruling that was going to come down. Well, we're now in June 2016. I actually thought something we were going to expect something maybe by April, but that hasn't yet come down, and we're still waiting. So a ruling could come down any day now from the court regarding this. My sincere feeling is that, yeah, as most of the observers seem to feel about this, that the FCC will win and net neutrality will not get struck down. And that is actually a very good thing, because that will actually, at least as far as the legal framework is concerned, put people and this idea regarding the internet as being a relatively open and neutral platform, where anyone with a relatively paltry amount of money and a lot of work can actually build something or make something very cool that could change the world.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is I got a notice from AT&T regarding data usage on my plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm taking a deep breath, you know, and I'm just wondering if, you know, can they do that? And I was thinking, well, maybe they can I haven't really looked at the contract, the user end, you know, I always, you know how it is. It could be mind conf and you say, yes, I agree to it. And, mm-hmm. you know, just to get the content. And I haven't really looked over, and I'm sure it has an ARB clause, you know, arbitration clause.
Yeah.
So, for those of you who are wondering what an arbitration clause is, there's, if you do take the time to read the user agreement that you agree to when you download content and they ask you to sign one, it's usually paragraph number 32 out of 52, you know, and it says that you can't really take the company to court without going to an arbitrator first, and usually the mediator is chosen by the corporation, and it's kind of like a non-court.
A lot of times, so that arbitrator probably was a former employee of the corporation at play.
Or
probably a big reason why they were chosen.
Yeah, and you know, if you're just a regular Joe or Jane, you know, and you don't know who the mediators are out there and what kind of rulings they had, or where to look, or you don't have access to Westlaw, or whatever, you can't find out what kind of decisions they make, you can't really make a good informed decision about, you know, what mediator is going to be mediating your case in arbitration, whereas supposedly in the major courts, you can reasonably assume that the judge is going to be at least committed to the idea of fair impartiality, although that I know from experience that doesn't always, it isn't always the case.
For the moment, to answer your question about whether or not they can do that, that is charged for data, for the moment, the answer seems to be yes. I suppose it all depends on a number of factors, not the least of which is how this ruling is going to play down in D.C. whenever it comes down. I frankly thought it was going to come down by now. It hasn't yet.
Is this in the D.C. Circuit?
Yep. Okay. First Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so, all right. I'll take a look at that and see if anything.
Yeah, I think the case is, it might simply be, well, the original case was NCTA versus FCC, but this might be AT&T's turn. Regarding the lawsuit about this.
I'm sure they get together in a room with a whole
Yeah, and they basically, you know, draw straws to determine who's going to sue the FCC next.
This
is AT&T's turn. The previous one was Verizon. The one before that was Comcast.
Right.
So.
Oh, Verizon is having a strike.
Had
a strike, yep. Yes. Yes, that's true. They did have a... But you know what? I listened to the Wall Street Journal. I don't read it. Part of the reason why I do the Wall Street Journal, I know it's like the cheat sheet for the bad guys. But
that's a good way of putting it, frankly.
It is a cheat sheet for the bad guys.
They should emblazon that as their new slogan. Street Journal, the cheat sheet for the bad guys.
it is a cheat sheet, but you know, they actually have some really good content, and you know, you could take it. I take everything I read it from the Wall Street Journal from that perspective, but at least. To their defense, they actually don't say that they're fair and impartial. They say, we're about the business community. This is our perspective. This is what we're going to report on. However, the content's really good. And it was interesting, because it was from the Wall Street Journal, how they were talking about, you know, we got this. They may have won the strike, but we don't have to pay so much in health care for the Verizon. And we're going to ask a lot of the guys... who are over 50, or gals perhaps too, you know, to take early retirement. And, you know, so it's just same old, dull. more, you know, like, yeah, they had a strike, but like, big whoop-de-doo, you know. I mean, it's not like it really made any difference in terms of the workers' lives.
The Wall Street Journal will, of course, dismiss whatever concerns here. There are some good things that have been said about the strike,
Okay. Especially
given the workers who were involved, the Communication Workers of America, which is one of your, something of a mixed bag, at least in my impression. They had actually been opposed to net neutrality, mainly on the grounds of jobs. Most of their employees do work for, most of the members of the CWA actually do work for a lot of the major corporations that have been opposed to net neutrality. So in this respect, at least, they're on the wrong side.
Mm-hmm.
But to a lot of extent, especially where this had been, and remarks about this regarding the most well-considered strike that had been. I mean, certainly the scale is making me the largest strike in quite a while, maybe even upwards of a decade or more, of the number of participants, probably upwards of, who knows, numbers I had seen and maybe banded about include maybe 40,000. That's probably an undercount, but quite a lot of members
who
were involved in the strike, leading the corporation to having to scramble over the course of about a month before they finally settled, at least for what I could see as far as an oral agreement. I don't know if they actually had gotten pinned down just yet. I have not heard any follow-up. I'm presuming the answer there is yes.
Well, you know, the thing that they didn't cover in the Wall Street Journal was whether or not, well, usually when there's an oral agreement to a contract, I know this from prior life experience, there is a period of time where the contract has to be voted upon by the members of the unions.
Right.
They have to approve it, but a certain number have to okay it. And I'm sure, you know, the problem with that is a lot of the union, one of the things that they did say in the Wall Street Journal article is that a lot of these folks didn't get paid for a month, so unless they had, you know, a significant savings during the strike, you know, healthcare benefits were kind of suspended, so a lot of them were hurting.
Yes.
From this,
mm-hmm.
And so it's entirely likely that just to get it over with, they may, you know, unilaterally vote for it, but it usually it does take some extra time after an oral agreement is reached, but that's significant that it was reached.
They were able, to be sure, yes. I mean, they were able to pry something out of the evil clutches of Verizon, and that's probably no mean feat there. So, you know, hurrah to the CWA and their efforts regarding the Verizon strike.
And not to mention, you know, the impact on the brand. I'm sure the share price has gone
down. Yeah, that was one thing that was definitely the subject of some chatter online, that the strike had a noticeable and precipitous effect on Verizon stock price. And yeah, that's, you know, that will, oh, people are going to lose money. Then people pay attention.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Then you get covered. Yeah.
Well, let's see if it recovers anytime soon. But I have a feeling that the days of Verizon are limited. Sometimes what happens when unions win is that the companies reorg and change into something else, or they get taken over by another company that's even bigger and even more evil. I've noticed that seems to be the case as well sometimes.
That might be hard in the telecom industry, mainly because it's just so utterly saturated. And there are not very many big players left.
True.
I mean, just to take an example, just 5 years ago, AT&T, which had been the number two cell phone provider, tried to buy out the T-Mobile, the number four provider, in a merger that actually got rejected by the government. And it took about a year for it to finally shake down. But it had the smell of, this is probably not a good thing, especially for something that where there are maybe four major players remaining in the lion's share of the market. Maybe 90% of the entire cell phone market is basically the fiefdom of four companies.
Well, yeah. But here's the other thing that I'm thinking, Mitchell. You know, with the election going on,
mm-hmm.
we're still under the umbrella of the Obama administration still.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite impressed, actually, with the last year of the Obama administration, more so than I ever have in the previous seven.
You're not alone. I'm thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but it wasn't that I didn't support him in the elections. Of course, I voted for the lesser of the two evils, and it was pretty easy back in 2008 and 2012. But I really had my doubts about his ability to get any significant things done. But the last year has just been phenomenal in terms of, for good or for ill, I mean, because I do recognize the fact that I'm speaking my own opinion here and not voicing a neutral opinion. It's a very biased opinion, my biased opinion. But the opening of the possible lifting of the embargo against Cuba, which is a huge thing for me personally. The other thing about Iran and negotiating with the Iranians after all these years. His visit to Hiroshima, which was extraordinary from a historical perspective. I wish he had issued an apology for that. That would have been awesome, but, you know, good enough that he actually went. I guess we could take what we can get. Not to mention, the Affordable Care Act, for good or for ill, it's still, you know, the law of the land. And you know what? It's becoming less and less of an issue, have you noticed? So those are four things that I think are...
What, no death panels? It is a big sign of progress that is a punchline.
Yeah.
I mean, now where it's just like, no, people are getting covered.
Yeah.
I mean, not as much as you would get under a kind of single-payer Medicare for all system that, you know, even actually Barack Obama himself had actually advocated while he was in the state Senate of Illinois.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of people's lives have been improved. And the law withstood not one but two Supreme Court challenges that would have almost certainly eviscerated the law twice over.
And true. But from the Wall Street Journal, talking about certain companies, I think it's, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's the Adventist or Advocate. It starts with an A. I know it is. I'll have to look it up. But one of the larger health companies,
Aetna?
Aetna, there you go.
You're thinking of an A in health company
Aetna
equals Aetna. Aetna.
I should think Aetna with an A. Okay. I'm kidding. It is actually suing the Obama administration for the fact that they haven't been paid for their claims and the extra costs. And the article also detailed, how much it's costing insurance companies to fund these mandates. But to me, an article like that, although it's, you know, noteworthy, it's kind of small potatoes compared to the two Supreme Court and the kind of furor that the Affordable Care Act inspired in the opposition about even 6 months ago.
Yes.
So that's...
No, I mean, that's the thing there. It's like they'll try to gin it up in the course of things, and then when they finally lose after, you know, a great deal of public ferment... And then they'll discover, no, the sky didn't fall after all.
Yeah.
And then actually a lot of people's lives actually were probably measurably improved. Maybe not perfect, but...
No.
But you know, it's, as you said, take what you can get, and some people's lives do improve.
Well...
Maybe a fair amount, actually.
But, the thing is, what we have to deal with right now is we do have to deal with the issues of an aging population.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, and you know, just statistically speaking, not making any judgments about people of any kind of age, but as you get older, especially with the kind of lifestyles we live here in the United States, with the standard American diet, our sedentary lifestyles, our stress, and the environmental assaults on our bodies every day, it stands to reason that as you get older, your body does decline in its functioning, and so a lot more people are reaching a certain age, and so they have more chronic health problems like hypertension and so on and so forth. And so I think the issue right now, but I think this is facing all developed countries where people get to live past the age of 50, where they're going to have to think about, you know, more different funding paradigms to make sure that everybody is covered. I think that's one of the challenges that we're having to deal with in developed countries right now is the aging population and dealing with all of the challenges relating to accommodating the needs of people as they grow older and more typically, not always, and that's not true for all people who are over a certain age, but more infirm. So, and they're living longer, but they're still getting sicker. So lots of work in that department. Okay. So what do we have to do in terms of a net neutrality? Do we just need to pay attention to the circuit court?
Whenever it comes out, and like I said, it could be tomorrow, could be any day. I thought it would have going to happen by now when the ruling would be announced. So keep an eye out for that. What will follow hinges to a great extent on what is exactly is going to come out of that. Here's what we're finding, though, in the meantime, is that, to no small surprise, a lot of the corporations that have been fighting net neutrality in the courts and are probably going to lose are trying to skirt around it in various other devious and not-so-devious ways.
Okay.
In fact, for example, on my way here to the studio, I happened to pass by a T-Mobile outlet where they had talked about how you can actually not get credit on your T-Mobile account if you're able to use streaming on certain select services. The three that they had highlighted were YouTube, Netflix, and Watch ESPN. And this matters and actually is a potentially grave net neutrality violation, because while you can get a lot of content on those outlets, if, say, I wanted to start out my own independent media service, you would have to pay to have to watch my service. And that's not neutrality. It's far from it, in fact. And
Run it by me again.
Okay.
So we have the big three.
Yeah. So T-Mobile. Suppose for the moment you have a T-Mobile account where you can stream T-Mobile service on your iPad, let's say.
Okay.
And so you want to watch something. So you could, say, watch a video on YouTube or download a movie on Netflix, or you want to follow, the NBA Finals on Watch ESPN or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
What's
the score now, anyway?
Golden State, game two, I think, is tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I followed it Thursday night. They're actually taking a lot of space in between the games. This series is going to be dragging on for quite a while.
I know.
Golden State's leading. But anyway,
we'll
leave the sports to other issues. We'll talk about things like, informative politics that you don't get anywhere else but WZRD.
Yeah.
If you have a subscription to T-Mobile and you watch any of those outlets, the amount of credits that you have assigned to you as part of your regular data allotment won't get penalized if you use any of those services. But if you were to watch Mitchell's brand new video service that I decided I wanted to set up, you actually would get your credits docked for you, even if I were to put on fantastic content from the best providers that everyone agrees is scintillating and informative and you can't live without. But nonetheless, it's penalized for this. You would get actually penalized. And you don't think... So that's one way they're skirting around that. And they've actually... You're seeing the beginnings of some movement to call, certainly T-Mobile, possibly other people who may be either considering or already doing this, out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're saying, well, that's not neutrality. And that's true. It's not.
No.
I mean, you can get a fair amount of content on those outlets, to be sure. I mean, heck, Chicago Independent Television, the TV show I help produce, has a channel on YouTube, and is one of our providers for providing content, especially if after episodes air and are archived, you can see episodes I produced 8 years ago on YouTube still, because they're still there in an archival format. But so then you might not get docked for that. That's good. But why should I have to restrict myself to YouTube? Especially where YouTube is now is a key component to Google's portfolio. Google owns YouTube.
Ugh.
And is now actually probably is the largest media, as far as the amount of money concerned from advertising, Google is now your king. Probably 13% of all global media spend dollars go to Google. And to a great extent, a reason for YouTube. The main corporate parent is a company stupidly named Alphabet. But the upshot is it's Google and YouTube and that corporation that now are basically flush with money to no small extent because of ad media buys, a lot of it on YouTube.
Yes, one of the things I have been, one of the projects I have been working on, and you might find this interesting, and it is on topic, sort of, is I have been following YouTube social media beauty bloggers.
Mm.
Don't get me started. I have a lot of opinions about, what I see. But what's interesting to me from a net neutrality and user perspective is how it's become such a meme, if you will. I don't know if I'm using the word properly, but okay, for an example, one of the things I'm really into, Mitch, and I tell this to everybody who asks because I think it's kind of cool. I'm interested in Korean beauty products, okay?
Okay.
I used to sell cosmetics in another life, you know, and so I'm into skincare. It's just my thing, you know, whatever.
Okay, yeah. Everyone has their own thing, so that's yours.
I have my thing. Yeah, some people like, some people play Dungeons and Dragons. I'm interested in, you know,
Korean beauty products.
Acid,
okay.
You know, and how it
okay,
people.
So okay. We'll take go with that.
Okay. So here I am. So I go and I go to you know, one of the reasons why I used to go to YouTube was to get reviews, you know, unbiased kid, you know, kids getting up, posting their video. Oh, you know, I used XYZ product and it did this to my zits and it did this to my wrinkles and it did this to my hair and to my nails, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then I would, you know, look for a bad one. I'd look for a good one and I'd kind of get a sense of where it was trending. Okay. Was
right.
it trending good? Was it trending bad? And that's how I use the YouTube.
Okay.
It was that and CNET, you know, for gadgets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to find, anything that I bought, I would go to YouTube to get user reviews. But now it's got to the point where it's so ubiquitous, I don't know if I'm saying it right, ubiquitous that now, like, a company like Unilever that owns Olay,
mm-hmm.
Olay products for the skin, for example, is now using the technique of a YouTube blogger to sell their products.
Are they hiring video makers? I mean, like maybe they're finding video makers who are promoting Unilever products and basically
yes.
saying, oh, we like what you're saying. Want to work for us?
No. I'm actually thinking that what they're actually doing is they're actually hiring actors.
Okay, they're making their own.
They're making their
okay.
own social media esque.
Right. So it's like
so
they're
oh, I'm
even though it's even though it's like, you know, a budget in the millions of dollars.
Right.
Their style to make it look like it's, you know, poorly backlit, one person in their bedroom,
yeah,
on
yeah.
a shaky cell phone cam.
And they're doing there's certain kinds of mannerisms on you know, the beauty blog. It's like, hi guys, welcome to my blog. Thanks for looking. You know, and
yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. So they follow all the conventions that you would see in a grassroots, you know,
yeah.
someone with no budget in their bedroom making a video on their cell phone and posting
no.
it to their YouTube account.
When I saw this ad, I know Target's been doing this for a while too, for like beauty and lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh, that's cheesy of them.
Right.
But smart. I mean, it's brilliant, but it's kind of scary. You know, you would think, okay, YouTube, all right, you're going to get like the real deal. You're going to get Joe Schmo out of his basement saying, don't use this sander. It sucks. It's bad. Whatever. And you think it's going to be unbiased, but it's not. I mean, and now all these major companies are saying, oh, we should get on the social media bandwagon because this is where...
Yeah, that's where all the kids are.
That's where all the kids are. That's where all the dollars are.
Our potential customer base.
It's,
and if we can sway that with a video that you can make for whatever, a pittance
right.
by the standards of a corporate bottom line, especially of a multi-billion dollar conglomerate like Unilever, all the better.
Right, exactly. So what the social media that we used to know and love has now become more cable footkind, you know? And it's sort of like that is what's happening anyway, regardless of whatever attempts we may, you and I or anyone who's concerned
yeah.
about unbiasedness. I honestly think there might be some good consumer law stuff that could actually be impacted by, you know, claims that YouTubers make on the internet too. I mean, I think there might be some issues with that regarding interstate
yeah.
commerce and so on and so forth. That there might be.
Yeah, international commerce too.
Right.
I mean, a video on YouTube could be conceivably watched anywhere in the world.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And so are we then going to, you know, it's something to watch. It's
yeah.
definitely a trend. And I was really taking it. I mean, I knew about that. You know, we all know about Facebook kind of being like that for like ages. It's been like that. But But YouTube, you know, it was kind of like it was catch as catch can, but you really have to be careful. You don't really know what's really going on until you really pay attention sometimes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to get under the radar and to be hoodwinked. And it makes sense that T-Mobile would, you know, consider things like YouTube and ESPN.
Netflix.
And Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
To be part of their family, to be part of their corporate brand, and
or kind of like part, you know, received partners.
Right.
I mean, T-Mobile is still part of a conglomerate in and of itself, Deutsche Telekom out of Germany.
Yeah.
So and then yeah, I mean they're still, you know, part of their own empire, except that it's just not an American one.
Yes. Yes.
But and is branded as an American with an American name, T-Mobile in the United States. The T stands for the German name Telekom.
Oh.
Which means telecom. Yeah, that's why it's Deutsche Telekom.
Oh.
German telecom is what it means. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
I need to do my homework.
That's all right. I'm good at answering questions like that.
Yes, thank you.
Of all sorts of trivial sorts.
Yeah.
The and what we're describing here is just one way in which these corporations are trying to skirt net neutrality and in anticipation of what could be a stinging defeat at the court level. And trying to actually appealing that to the Supreme Court, good luck with that.
Yes.
That actually was heard. A net neutrality court has already been heard at the Supreme Court. NCTA versus FCC in 2005. And there, the lawsuit basically hinged on... No, I take that back. Brand X. It was the Brand X case.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
An internet service provider out of California named Brand X actually said, no, you can't, the FCC can't reclassify this because that would lead to all kinds of horrible things. And the Supreme Court actually affirmed the FCC, even though in the ruling you can actually read it's like, this is probably not the best thing to do, but it's your call, and if you feel this is the best thing to do, so be it. And actually by a 6-3 ruling, actually affirmed what the FCC had done. And the fact that now the corporations are going to try to sue them, you know, try to appeal to the Supreme Court after they lose, they'll try to appeal. Whether or not the Supreme Court takes it, especially with, you know, the trends that the Supreme Court now has, especially after Antonin Scalia's death, they're probably, and especially since we've already ruled on this, we don't need to rule on this again.
What's
no thanks.
What's your feeling about that, Mitchell? I mean, as someone who's in the front lines of, about this, I mean, with Antonin Scalia's untimely demise, his transition to another plane of existence. I mean,
yeah, he has a special place in hell, I'm sure.
Your words, not mine.
and proudly so, but go on.
and totally agreed with this wizard dress. Okay, so basically, I just wanted to get your take on what's going on with this. How do you think... Now, I'm sorry, I haven't kept up with this. Do you know if Obama is going to be able to vet any candidates? I mean, he's attempted, but Congress has said...
Congress is now in a 100-day... It's now... We just passed the 100 days since Antonin Scalia's death.
Right.
And actually just marked last week. Actually, one of my... one of the news feeds I follow is actually keeping tabs. We just passed the 100th day since Antonin Scalia's death. It was about a month after that, after his passing, that Merrick Garland was nominated by Obama as his replacement on the Supreme Court. And almost, in fact, even almost as soon as Antonin Scalia died, the Republicans in the Senate, that day, it was like January, whatever it was, a Saturday, 26th or so.
Conspiracy theorist in me wonders about that.
It's like nothing to wonder. You could read it on in the history on Twitter about Republicans who are basically saying this. This is on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically saying, we will not give a millimeter of attention to any nominee that Barack Obama submits forth. And true to form, that's exactly what's happened. I mean, Mark Kirk is actually, you know, kind of stuck his neck out by basically saying, yeah, we should probably at least have a meeting, maybe a hearing. We'll vote no, but we'll just, you know, at least go through the motions.
Well, you know, you got to give him props for even that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And because he's in a competitive Senate race that he may well lose.
So
he's in a real dogfight, and anything he can do to seem, especially in a close race, where he can actually try to, where his bona fides will depend on how progressive he is. And on a couple of issues, he probably is. Global warming, for example.
Oh, really?
Plus also on healthcare issues. You recall that the guy had a stroke while he was in the Senate. He actually missed upwards of a year of work.
Wow.
And so now suddenly he's keen on healthcare issues because he knows it firsthand.
He was
hospitalized for the better part of a year, recovering from a stroke.
Absolutely.
As far as the Supreme Court goes, there is a small chance that they may try to ram through Merrick Garland, depending on how the 2016 election pans out. Here's what I mean. I'm taking it as a given that the Democrats are probably going to win the White House. Whoever comes out, likely to be Hillary Clinton, could be, although there's an outside chance of it, and the window is shrinking, Bernie Sanders. Whoever comes out of the Democratic primary, I'm assuming will be the Republican nominee for president. For two big reasons.
We're recording this. So.
Yeah, I'm recording this, and I'm not. I will eat crow if I'm wrong.
Okay.
But I'm going out on the limb here, and I don't think it's a shaky limb.
I have a special recipe for crow fricassee.
Okay. I'm sure, and I will stop by at the end of the year and ask for it, and we'll probably devote a show to cooking it. But
yeah.
But in the moment, here's what I would project based on what I've seen and what I can infer from patterns. Fact one is that Democrats can reliably lean on 18 states as far as their base of four presidencies in elections. Now, you only need 270 electoral votes to win the presidency, and they basically can lock in 240-ish states. They only need to win another 30 or so electoral votes, and the lion's share of those are in what are proverbially called the swing states, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania to some extent, Virginia to some extent, North Carolina to some extent. So they're like a handful of states that are where the lion's share of the campaigning, probably from now to the end, until the November election takes place, are going to be devoted, because that's where the fight will be won and lost.
You know, if I were a voter in Ohio, I would definitely cancel my phone.
Don't be surprised if you find people who actually do just that.
I know.
But the thing is, the Democrats have been able to at least win those states, certainly in the last two elections, to no small extent because the demographics of those states have been favoring Democrats. Where Republicans are basically leaning on white and increasingly, speaking of aging again, older voters. The demographics, those voters are and have been slowly, hate to say it, but it's true, slowly dying off. That is the Republican voter base. And where millennials and voters of a kind of Generation Y voting, basically those who were born at or after 1980, are and almost voting, almost with rare exceptions, not voting Republican. There the debate is probably Democrat or Green, frankly.
Well, you know, I have...
Or which Democratic Party candidate.
Now, here's the thing, though. I have a number of... My two nephews, my two little... Well, they're both Trump supporters, okay?
Okay. How old are they?
One is... Well, he's in college. Let's see. He's 19, 20. And the other one is just finished his MBA.
Okay.
And, oh my goodness, he posted something on Facebook quoting Gordon Gekko from Wall Street.
From Wall Street, yeah. The character played by Michael Douglas.
Yes.
Okay.
And he was like, greed is good.
Yeah,
and
greed is good. Greed works.
And I posted a little snippy, snarky thing, and I said, well, if someone didn't get his ethics on his way to his MBA, and business ethics. There's a really great article. Mitchell and I both are alums. He's an alum, in fact, and I'm alum sort of by affiliation to the University of Chicago and in our alum magazine on business ethics.
Mm-hmm.
Written by someone from the School of Social Research. I forgot his name right off the top of my head. It's Morality and Business Ethics that I am cutting out and adding to his little graduation gift.
Oh, that will be cute.
And I told him, you may need to read, A Theory of Moral Sentiments by Adam Smith. But anyway, I'm describing my nephews just to give you a sense
of
their perspective.
Not to say that, someone who was born after 1980 can't lean Republican and wouldn't want to support Trump.
But here's the thing. Oh, wait, I just want to talk
about whoever that. Whoever they would support on the Republican side.
But I think he represents both of them represent, they're young and white and male,
Okay.
And they're both in, they both hail from Indiana, Ohio, that area.
Right.
They're both, they've both been directly or indirectly impacted by the Great Recession of 2008. Mm-hmm. I mean, who hasn't been?
And that's probably a big reason for Trump's appeal, because he, whether or not you think he will buy into it, the noises he had been making in some respects, although also racist and misogynistic, are also actually rather potent when we're talking about class. He's actually been, it's like you'll hear him basically, poo-poo lobbyists in the middle of the Republican debate. None of the other candidates would even lift a finger about that issue. But to some small degree of credit, Donald Trump is, and especially where he's making noises regarding, eviscerating middle class and saying they need some measure of support. Yeah, then that's probably a big reason why he's getting some appeal, especially given where the Republicans had a clown car full of candidates, upwards of 17 candidates at one time.
Did they really have 17?
Yes.
Holy Moses!
I counted 17 candidates at their peak.
Ooh.
Even with as little as 3 months before. Both Kasich and Cruz, your last two candidates, dropped out. There had been many as seven at one point.
There have been quite a few.
Yeah, and given that amount, you would actually see a fair amount of a lot of disillusion of the vote. A lot of people wouldn't consolidate among one or more small candidates, and where Donald Trump would be able to garner 30%, 30% would be enough to be able to win, and that's basically the base before getting down to, two, three, or as few as five candidates.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, you've only got five, you have to pick. Okay, I'll pick the guy who makes money, or ostensibly does, although that's also now something up to question. But anyway, going back to the issue regarding where I think it's going to go in 2016.
Sure.
The Republicans, here's what I'm going to predict, getting my crystal ball. Demographics seem to say that it's going to be, we've had now another 4 years since the 2012 campaign where Barack Obama had won a second term.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's yet another 4 years of the same demographic trends, where fewer white males are voting because increasingly they've been dying in terms over time. I mean, not to say that's a good thing, but it's just simply stating facts. And where communities of color, Hispanics, African Americans, are increasingly larger in the demographic, a larger demographic presence, and are going to vote proportionally, you would figure. And so as a result now, states that previously had been swing states are now leaning Democratic. I'm reading that to mean whoever comes out of the Democratic Party nomination process is going to win the presidency, barring some unforeseen calamity. I'm reading that's going to be the case. We'll probably have a Democratic president. The key questions are going to be how is it going to shape out regarding the Senate? Because the Republicans currently hold a four vote lead in the Senate. It's something like 54-46, I think is the number. So the Republicans need to preserve those numbers at least. Democrats need to flip four seats. And I think there's a very realistic chance that can happen, especially given a lot there are going to be, especially in a wave year where people are going to vote and they're going to vote in big numbers. That usually bodes well for Democrats historically, and I expect that'll probably be the case in 2016. And the number of states that they need to defend are going to be votes, candidates that tended to vote Democratic. For example, Illinois, Mark Kirk versus Tammy Duckworth. Mark Kirk won in 2010 by the skin of his teeth. And now has to defend himself in 2016 against a paraplegic veteran who has long time and also has built a reputation as a politico as well, and is female to boot. So, now these demographic trends are going to be it. I not to say that I'm saying Tammy Duckworth is perfect, far from it. I've actually produced media that have been very critical of Tammy Duckworth, especially regarding her campaign to actually get into Congress to begin with, where she was actually the pro-war candidate against Christine Sigalis, who was a very strident anti-war candidate for the 10th district in Illinois.
Yep.
She had fought and she won and has been able to ride the coattails of that very likely to a Senate seat. But that's one Senate seat that's up for grabs. So another one, we could see the return of, I'm blanking on his name, Wisconsin, Russ Feingold. Russ Feingold would actually be able to defeat, who actually lost to in 2010,
mm-hmm.
Rob Johnson. So that's now you got two seats. Pat Toomey, who is now a vulnerable candidate, could actually lose in Pennsylvania. Portman in Ohio. Not to mention, Gene Shaheen in New Hampshire. You might even count John McCain. John McCain is increasingly seen as vulnerable, and where especially the guy is 84 years old.
Well,
and you'd be asking him to serve another 6 years?
Right.
Yeah.
And
especially, I mean, that's true. I mean, we're talking Arizona voters here, haha.
Yes, no.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, I should also be fair. My in-laws actually live in Arizona, so I've got to be issue here. But
and also,
I mean, yeah, you certainly
in some city of no place. I mean, where everybody and their brother's like pushing 90. I mean, there's.
But also the demographics up there. It's close to the border. You have a representation, I mean, increasingly Hispanic, and they're going to be voting, and they're certainly not going to vote for a Republican, especially if they're seeing Trump on a Republican ticket. It's like, who else is on the Republican ticket? John McCain? Forget that.
Yeah.
So now that's... I just mentioned, or rattled off, six senators. Democrats need to peel away four of those. And I haven't even talked about what's happening in Florida, or Richard Burr, who might be considered as increasingly vulnerable in North Carolina. So if the Senate flips, and I think that could happen, then you now have one house of in Congress actually flipping Democratic.
Well, that would be very helpful if we,
especially in the Supreme Court side.
True.
Yeah.
And see, this is why I'm concerned.
Because it's
about
the Senate that actually confirms Supreme Court nominees.
And we want to make sure that whoever replaces Alito is someone that's at the very minimum middle of the road. I mean, someone.
You mean not Alito, but Scalia.
Scalia.
Alito's still.
Yes, Alito's still.
His heart's still beating.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. Yeah, Saul Alito. Okay.
they used to be called Scalito because
Alito.
It was a polio. When
yeah.
he was actually, when Samuel Alito was up for nomination,
I know.
They were like, yeah, they were like saying he's going to vote like Scalia, so they're calling him Scalito for short.
Scalito.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know his numbers, but yeah, they probably kind of when he served along with Antonin Scalia, I bet you that their numbers were probably pretty similar.
Right.
Their voting patterns were not quite identical, but pretty similar.
Yeah. And well, you know, but the thing is, who we have on the Supreme Court is really important, especially
mm-hmm.
when it comes to issues of net neutrality and other issues that.
And where it's not going to be just trying to replace Antonin Scalia.
Right.
Three of the current sitting nine members are at age 78 or above.
Right.
There
exactly.
is a very real chance that whoever becomes the next president will probably be nominating as many as four nominees in one term to the Supreme Court.
And that is why it is so important for everybody, ladies and gentlemen, to go and vote this election season to make sure that we do not get someone like a Donald Trumpez in the office of
yeah.
president. Because, you know, not to say that, I don't know, you know, Donald Trump's kind of a loose cannon, and like you said, and one of the things, you know, I'm not, because I have family members who support him, and so I have that perspective, you know, this idea, like you mentioned it earlier, Mitchell, about class, and I think that is one of the appealing things. One of the things I kind of like about his candidacy is that he's sort of bringing to the surface, at least in terms of coverage, the vast gap between the political establishment, so to speak, and the actual
everyday
election.
Americans.
Yeah, and everyday
yeah.
Americans. Now, I'm not saying that that's a good, that what he's representing is a good thing, but I am saying that at the very minimum, it's kind of like a symptom that, you know, like a health, I'm kind of like in the health mode right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Kind of like if you were to have high blood pressure and then you were to, you know, you realize, oh my gosh, I have, you know, cholesterol that's through the roof, I better do something or I'll get a heart attack. You know, it's kind of a good thing to know that you have high blood pressure because then it kind of makes the doctor aware of all the other possible problems that
mm-hmm.
are wrong with you.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a good thing that Donald Trump is sort of like
a symptom of a greater disease.
A symptom of a greater disease that we have in the political process. So maybe maybe that's drawing to light certain things about the electoral process, that it is not as accessible as it used to be, that it is class-based, that it is run by money and corporate interests, and that the corporate interests don't even give a rat's behind to the everyday average American.
A certain British term came to mind, but I'm not going to say it because I'm on the radio.
We want to make sure we keep it clean.
Yep,
so
yep.
Yes. But you can all read our thought bubbles over the airwaves. So you know what we're really going to say. But the truth of so that's why I think Trump is important from a historical perspective, because and why he is striking a nerve, like the way Reagan did back in the 80s, of a disaffected class of people, of voters in this country whose needs are simply not being addressed by the larger society. And I think that's the problem that we have.
One other thing that actually kind of came out kind of astonishingly and very quickly out of the campaign of Donald Trump for president is that it kind of exposed the, I wouldn't call it lie, but basically the convenient fiction that people will vote Republican because they happen to agree with their economic policies or philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like, I remember seeing a tweet along the lines of David Brooks, the conservative New York Times columnist, is supposedly having an existential crisis because 35 years of tax cuts for the rich have now led to Donald Trump. And he's just like, why did this happen? I was like, well, because you had 35 years of tax cuts for the rich. What were you going to expect?
But do you think, can we make a correlation? Can we say that's a form of causation or is it correlation? I mean, I don't know. I mean, is Donald Trump the result of the increasing economic inequality and he's just a symptom of that? Or
I think it's a number of things. To be fair, that yes, it's there is some degree of disaffection among voters, especially among the historical base of the Republican Party, predominantly white, predominantly male, predominantly rural, but who would vote, which is actually something of a, especially where they're basically getting their teeth in economically speaking, teeth kicked in economically speaking, where they don't have, where jobs that typically you may not necessarily even need a college degree to be able to get, are increasingly sparse. Those you can get don't pay nearly as much as they used to. May not be able to live the kind of thing to be able to afford to feed a family on.
Well, using my nephew as a case study.
Sure.
Okay, that's why I brought up
the... Okay, okay, the so NBA. Let's we'll go with that.
So he's in Indiana, right? He's mm-hmm. in a small city in Indiana. He is got his MBA from a not a first-tier school. I kept on telling him, but did he listen to me? No. But anyway, he got it from a second-tier school. He's newly minted MBA.
Okay.
And he is working at a job where he got promoted, and now, whoop-de-doo, he's making $15 an hour.
Okay.
With an MBA.
Right.
In that part of the, he likes
but
the job.
By those standards, that actually could be, he may actually be in the upper quartile of incomes. I don't know. It depends on a lot of things.
Yes, exactly.
So it actually, by his standards, he actually may be living like a king, but I don't know.
He's not living like a king.
Okay, then I stand corrected.
No, he's not. He wants to, he would love to have
But we see your point that, somewhat you'd figure at least, even getting an advanced degree would lead to, a better job and more money, maybe appreciably so. But enough to be able to live or to be able to, buy a house or get a mortgage or buy a car, maybe not. And especially where you may have to get a second job in order to be able to keep up with all of those things.
Or he has to marry someone who...
Or marry someone rich or something like that.
Significantly more
money. And that may be hard to do in, some small town in Indiana.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. I mean, he's doing everything supposedly right, and this is the best that he can do.
And so, he's understandably disaffected. So, with the media that they have, which is probably, right-wing talk radio, cable, which probably predominantly features but maybe doesn't include, maybe doesn't exclude out beyond them Fox News, whatever the local channels are, a newspaper if there is one, which will probably include in columnists like Charles Krauthammer or George Will or, you know, the right-wing ilk.
Yeah, right.
So it's like, I mean, what are you going to see? You're going to see this line, and then Donald Trump is featured because he's famous. He had a TV show for the better part of a decade on NBC, which everyone watched, which actually ranked as high as 7th in the ratings. And you know, everyone knows his name, and everyone knows he's a fancy billionaire, and the art of the deal, and makes cameos in movies like Home Alone 2.
And he makes, you know, he can fire people on the air.
Yeah. It's like his, in fact, I remember the headline from The Onion, actually in 2004, shortly after The Apprentice debuted and was a big hit. The headline featuring a pose of Donald Trump was "A Nation Delighted by Rich Jerk Who Fires People." I have to admit, I edited that. The word wasn't jerk.
We know.
You can look that up, but it is The Onion after all. But yeah, you see my point. It's like, yeah, it's like, so he's famous. And so, yeah, he gets lots of free coverage. In fact, that is a big reason why his campaign has gotten the solvency it has, even with the relative pittance of money that was being spent. He scored as far as the amount of free media coverage. The New York Times actually did an analysis. Our estimates now are probably upwards of a $2 billion of free media coverage that he would get. He would give a speech and it would air practically uninterrupted on Fox News for 2 hours. How much do you think that would cost? I mean, a 30-second ad would probably cost in the ballpark of $70,000. So, but he gets a 2-hour speech uninterrupted on Fox News for free. Not to mention repeated, another trick he'd use, call-in shows. He'd call into Fox News or CNN and would be able to get, you know, another 10 minutes of free coverage.
Well, la-ti-da.
But you see my point. It's like, but
I had no idea he got to speak on Fox News for 2 hours for.
Oh, yeah, and it's like lots of, I mean, they counted the amount of free media coverage. It was estimated now at the time when they first did the report, $1.3 billion.
No wonder,
probably upwards of $2 billion.
And no wonder the other Republicans were PO'd because they were like, well, we have to pay for this.
Here's the thing. It's certainly in the case of the Jeb Bush campaign, they had the cash. Oh, Jeb Bush had assembled a war chest in the order of 9 figures, upwards of $100 million of estimates, usually from, you know, dark money and super PACs and, you know, his daddy's corporate friends.
Oh, yes.
But, I mean, also, I mean, you know, Jeb Bush has plenty of connections of his own. He was governor of Florida for 4 years.
Yeah, probably.
And the brother of another president.
He probably raided King Solomon's mind.
Yeah. So, and we have, you know, whatever other illegal things he did to try to raise the money to try to get. But especially where the Florida primary was a key issue there, they let loose. They had to understand, I mean, certainly both the Marco Rubio campaigns, because he's a sitting senator in Florida, at least for the moment, and Jeb Bush, who had been the senator, and as a lot of people thought it was going to be the next heir apparent, so it would make him the third Bush in 5 presidencies. To become president.
So they
had the money and they blitzed, absolutely wallpapered televisions and radio stations up the wazoo in Florida and just basically say Donald Trump is bad. Donald Trump is horrible. So they had the money. They spent it. They got a lot of ads. And Lord knows the TV stations that are looking forward to election years were more than willing to take their money and air them.
Sure.
So then did it help? Did it even make it competitive? Everyone knows no. Donald Trump won and it wasn't close. That very day, Jeb Bush announced he was suspending his campaign. Even though it's like, okay, we're making this our last stand. You know, batten down the hatches, let loose all the money, deploy every penny we've got. But nonetheless, even with all that money spent, they still couldn't get Donald Trump because Donald Trump had such an advantage. Even when you were to count the amount of paid media that was paid for, they got the amount of free media and consistent free media coverage was still there and made an impact, especially given the message that Donald Trump had said, at least to be able to get the primary voters.
Now,
he has to try to pivot to try to the general election. But the problem is, it's not like the Republican primary was a secret. Everyone could see it. Everyone saw it. In fact, national television coverage gave, you know, nonstop coverage to debates. You could hear what they were saying. It's public record. And if you ever forgot, it's easy. You know, you're a YouTube search away from seeing all the debates or seeing the previous coverage or seeing speeches, transcripts, you know, plenty to be able to review. What they said is out in the open. What Trump said is out in the open. So now it's like general party voters are saying, okay, you have to pick whoever the Democrats are going to select or Donald Trump. And, oh, what did he say? Oh, here's a year's worth of statements that he said. Oh, it's out there.
That's breathtaking.
Yeah.
That is really breathtaking.
So now it's like you're going to try to pivot. Good luck.
Right. Right. And you know what? The thing also, like you had mentioned, and one of the thoughts that came to my mind was that in contrast, Jeb Bush has not spent the last 8 years developing his brand the way that Donald Trump has in the media.
To be fair, though, that is true. To be fair, though, also, in fact, it's actually probably even worse. Jeb Bush had to try to restore his brand because a presidency with the name president with the name Bush, especially given all the fiascos that happened under the last Bush.
True.
Now he's like he has to try to restore the brand. Build it.
You know, a lot of the Republicans are sort of repudiating the Bush years. They're not kind of looking back at those halcyon days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When Bush 2 was in office.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody's saying, you know, that's sort of like there's this eerie silence in the media about that, you know? I mean, they bring back the glory days of Ronald Reagan. You see
right.
a lot of stuff about Reagan, right? But you don't see a lot of stuff about the former.
Never mind the Iran-Contra and all the scandals that kind of enveloped the Reagan era. There wasn't, you know, those weren't, you know, pristine days either. But yeah, your point's well taken.
Yes.
Yeah, Republicans don't want to touch that stuff.
No, they don't. And rightfully and understandably
yeah,
so.
Yeah, understandably so. Yeah.
Boy, this is a bad time to be. Well, let's just say, you know, the Chinese curse
may you live in interesting times. Yeah.
It's definitely upon the Republican Party right now.
Yeah.
The party of the so-called big tent, you know, where they, we accept just about everybody and their brother. I mean, they're... But I think that the
not anymore.
All of the stuff you're saying about Donald Trump is really important because this is the future. I really believe this isn't our future. This is what everything that all of the stuff that we've been, you and I people like us, I guess. I don't know if that's the right way to put it, but folks who have been really concerned about media and content. I've been concerned about this for a long time. This untrammeled railroading of an electoral process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on one hand, you know, I'm not so alarmed and surprised by it because it's the voice of the people finally, or a certain segment of the voice of the people finally being heard.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a different segment of the voice being heard with the Bernie supporters, correct?
Yes.
And you and I differ. I mean, I know a number of people here at WZRDE are, you know, definitely supporting Bernie Sanders as a viable candidate for the presidency. A lot of people think he's the best thing since sliced bread, you know, and all of that. And I'm not so sure. I remain skeptical, respectful, but skeptical of his ability to turn things around and get the nomination. But, you know, I can always be wrong, so I'm ready to eat crow myself. What do you have to say to that?
What do I have to say?
Yeah.
Regarding Bernie Sanders, not to interrupt, but we're at 1 o'clock. We probably should do a station ID and maybe take a break.
Yes.
And then we can
talk
afterwards.
I do want to do that too. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we should take a break. Let's listen to some more grunge light. What do you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
why not?
We got all the grunge classics here. Well, we just played that one while we were introducing it called Teen Spirit, and I guess we should do. How about 1,000 Smiling Knuckles? You know, I mean, that would be great. Oh, my goodness gracious. Let's see. Oh, wait, let me, you know what, Mitchell, let me do one thing.
Yeah.
Let me just say that this is WZRD Chicago, 88.3 FM on your radio dial. Thanks so much for listening. We have on the show with us this afternoon now, Mitchell Sapanzik. Well, Mitchell, while we're still chatting, and we are going to take a comfort break in just a moment where you get to listen to some fantastic grunge like music. Lawrence Welkish versions of
covers of Nirvana songs.
And among other things. And my goodness gracious.
What do you think of Lawrence Welk? Only terrific, sir. That's real toe tapping music.
That was a quote
of a Dudley Do-Right cartoon.
Yes. Okay. So
Dudley Do-Right is a big Lawrence Welk fan.
So tell all the 10 listeners where else you park your voice on the radio dial.
At the moment, nowhere.
Really?
Yep.
My
radio show and shows got canceled. LUW had been an air broadcaster from the trenches for the better part of 14 years. I had been its producer for the last five. Last April, as part of mass cancellation, I was going to use the word purge, but I'm not going to say that. Mass cancellation of a lot of shows from the trenches got the axe.
Whoa, and...
So it is currently not broadcasting. In fact, it's not even being produced. I'm actually going to jumpstart it, and actually starting tomorrow with an interview I'm going to conduct as a podcast. I may bring it back to the radio. I haven't taken motions toward that yet.
We'll have to see about that, Mitchell.
Okay. Well, I'm open to change on this, but yeah, I am not parked on the radio, but you can find me online, and also has helped to produce a TV show. So just let me plug those. So,
Okay.
Chicago Indie Media is one home of mine, the Chicago Independent Media Center at chicago.indymedia.org, and INDYMEDIA is how you spell indie media. Chicago Media Action is another group I've been part of. In fact, I actually posted a blog post yesterday regarding Gannett and Tribune. We can probably talk about that after our break. The website for that is chicagomediaaction.org. And also on Twitter, look for the handle Chai Media Action. My personal website is www.szcz.org. The first four letters of my last name, szczepańczyk.org. And I also help to produce Chicago Independent Television, the monthly TV show of the Chicago Independent Media Center, which airs on the first and the third Monday of each month at 11 p.m. on KNTV Channel 19 in Chicago on Chicago Cable, and also on both satellite networks on DirecTV and Dish Network as part of Free Speech TV. You can look that up at freespeech.org, Channel 9415 on Dish Network, and then Channel 375, where Free Speech TV on DirecTV. It airs usually on the weekends. Schedules vary, but you can look that up there.
Okay.
Look for Chicago Independent Television. But yes, our channel is broadcast on national satellite.
Before I start playing the...
play music and then take a break.
Yeah, okay. I want to hear more about what happened
at WLUW.
Yes, I thought they were.
In this case, they were not. I'm sad to say.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I am very crestfallen about that.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
I got the announcement 2 days before what was going to be the last episode of From the Trenches. I got an email Friday morning. For an episode that I was actually had been producing for weeks, actually, that was going to air that Sunday.
Do you have any archives?
Yes, absolutely. All the archives of the show, nearly all the 14 years worth of episodes, are online at chicago.indymedia.org.
Whoa.
Look at the podcast, certainly the last 5 years of what I had produced. And if you actually go through the archives at the top of the page and actually go through and follow the links, you can actually find another 9 years worth. Not quite everything, but a lot.
So, Mitchell, let me ask you this. I mean, do you know if they're going to be taken over by NPR?
No. I'll say this. The station, I don't want to pretend that I can read the minds of the regents of Loyola University of Chicago regarding the station. What it reads to me to be is an attempt to try to garner more students who would be going to Columbia College. So the idea would be, if you're trying to break into a career in media, particularly in radio, and you want to get trained for that, for a lot of people in their mind's eye, that would mean Columbia College.
Right.
Because they're the premier media-related school in Chicago.
This is true.
Yeah, and they have their own radio station and also focus it almost exclusively, maybe even exclusively, on radio, on professional development. student developments.
Right.
My thinking is, my reading of the situation, although I am open to correction on this, if anyone can tell me this otherwise, but my reading of the situation is that I think that the communications department at Loyola University, which has the license to WLUW, is probably wants to try to get some of those student dollars, tuition dollars, so that it's those students that would be leaning toward to become, majoring in communications with a focus on radio. They want to try to get some of those students. And to try to do that, they would focus on the transition of the radio station to that effect, a lot of which has actually been, this has not been that, not that much of a change, especially since this has been kind of the direction that the station had been kind of leaning over the last
so
5 years or so.
Evolving.
It's been evolving, and this was kind of the next step. And from the trenches was just one of those things that kind of got in the way of the steamroller that was making that change. It wasn't just from the trenches. Labor Express, a very long-standing labor-focused radio program, aired weekly on Sunday nights. It was Sunday nights on WLUW, also canned. I am happy to report they are actually back online and also on the air, broadcasting out of Lumpen Radio.
Oh, yes,
we discussed this before. It turns out that our good friends at the Prosperity Sphere on the south side, the Lumpen Project, Ed Marshevsky being a key component of that group, had applied for and gotten a low-power radio broadcasting license from the FCC.
Yeah.
The fight that we had done, and it actually kind of ties into what had gone on with WLUW, because their former general, Sean Campbell, previous program director at WLUW, had worked there at LUW for a number of years before she got fired. And as a part of that, she basically said, I'm going to make my own radio station. So she did, CHIRP, the Chicago Independent Radio Project.
Right.
They had lobbied and had been a very key component in the grassroots efforts to ask for an expansion of the low-power radio license window to get more radio stations in Chicago and in big cities across the United States.
Yeah.
And it worked. They got the campaign. They were able to fight even the most well-heeled of lobbies, the National Association of Broadcasters. These are people you do not screw around with. And yet they took them on and they beat them at their own game. And as a result, they were able to get a number of radio stations, of which CHIRP was a beneficiary, as well as Lumpen Radio. So it turns out that the fight, there's this kind of purging of, changes at WLUW, had some positive effects. It led to a number of other grassroots radio stations that are now on the air, literally so, or very close to it. They're now scrambling to get their broadcast studio, their broadcast towers up and on the air. And, CHIRP is now, if not there, very close to it. Lumpen has gotten their license. They're now on the clock to get a tower up to start broadcasting. And Labor Express now airs on WLPN-LP, Lumpen Radio, on the south side.
Okay.
So they landed on their feet. They're back on the air, and they're in a community spot, and they are very well ensconced.
One of my favorite shows was Voz Latina. Is that still on, or is that gone?
I don't know.
I'm gonna have to find.
We're gonna have to look that up.
Yep. Oh my goodness gracious, Mitchell, that is quite the news.
Thank you
for updating.
Absolutely.
Me on that. Well, again.
You win some, you lose some. Hopefully, you try to improve it over time. I'm happy to report we now have more radio, community radio in Chicago. CHIRP, Lumpen, probably a couple of others that were able to get off the ground.
Well, we do need community
radio. Yeah, and ZRD is still, on the air and kicking it, and I'm very grateful that we have a slot here and that you let me talk on.
Yes, and we definitely have a forum here for as long as we are allowed to have it.
Well, we should take our break, though.
I agree with you 100%. So let's listen to some more Lawrence Welk-esque grunge music to transition us to the next hour. Yes, you are listening to WZRD Chicago. Yes, we are still here on the air. And this is WZRD Chicago 88.3 FM, home of freeform musical and media madness. And now for some grunge live. Okay, we're back. This is WZRD Chicago, 88.3 FM on your radio dial. With me is Mr. Mitchell Shapanchuk. Did I get that right?
Shapanchuk.
Thank you. And we are here and we're talking about many things news-wise, but the latest thing, alas, we have a caller. But dear caller, we cannot answer your phone call while we are on the air. Many apologies. I'm so sorry. All right. Without further ado, we are going to continue with our conversation. Hopefully that will work. Right, Mitchell?
Yes.
Okay. So you were saying, we were talking about your being essentially fired by email at WLUW.
Mm-hmm.
Were you paid for that position?
No.
That was
the station, and my role was volunteer. The station is nonprofit as part of, maybe there are like two paid staff in the entire station. And, excuse me. And, I had done the work for free, for years. I felt it was important to keep the show going, especially where no one else had picked it up. So I felt it upon myself, and actually with a friend of mine in the early going, to keep it going. So I did. It was actually a show that I think would have ended maybe 5 years ago. 5 years before it actually got the axe, we were able to make 5 years more worth of shows. So get, ideas out, get information out, and get them all archived online. So the show is still there, and so you can still listen to it.
While you're coughing and clearing your throat, I just wanted to say that...
I'm better
okay.
now.
That's okay. Thank you. I know it's very stuffy in the station. My apologies for that. so anyway, we did get a call from a caller who said that... he was listening. They're actually listening. So thank you for listening. And thank you, previous caller, for listening. But we cannot entertain phone calls at this time. What I'm doing right now is I'm looking for the radio station at Columbia College because he had asked about it. He said that he told me on the phone that he was not. No longer a listener of WLUW 5 years ago. Interesting. No. Mm. Because they had ceased doing public affairs programming. And I think that's one of the things we need to be thinking about and talking about, Mitchell, is how tenuous our life form is in the media. Because we do have a toehold. We're there. We're kind of like a dead penny. We're still there. But it's like we're constantly being stepped on by the big powers that be,
I regard it as kind of stinks, but I kind of regard it as just another element of the struggle here to be able to, even with outlets that are accommodating and that are open and that are willing and a lot of times even courageous. Certainly WZRD, it's not just the forum that we have, but ask anyone who's been here for a while, and they will tell you the struggles it took to keep this station afloat and online and on the air.
Yes, absolutely. So, several battles. We've had several battles over the decades. True.
Yes, and so even accounting for that, that's just one of the elements, but also the element of keeping a show on the air, week after week, month after month, year after year. I was lucky that From the Trenches was a monthly show. But even there, it was like, what are you going to have next month? Or can you find the time to be able to produce all the segments?
Right. And it is time consuming. And that's what lot of my friends who know that I volunteer here, and they're like, well, why isn't that CD that you had promised me that you were going to do done? I'm like, well... yeah, where am I going to get 6 hours of time to put it all together?
Right.
And when you work two jobs and, have a family and mm-hmm. all of that, and you have all this other stuff that you're involved in. So, so six of one, half dozen of the other, and, it wasn't an amateur position. But, still the thing is, it was so unilateral. It sounds to me like it was very unilateral.
Yeah, yes. And, it was very much unilateral. I made no bones regarding my discontent on the last 7 minutes of the final episode. I had gotten notice basically when the episode was all but done. And I thought to myself, well, it's like, okay, this stinks, but I need to say something. And so I did. I actually made what basically amounted to an editorial for what had happened in the way the episode was seized for the final 7 minutes of the final episode. So I actually, you know, got on my soapbox and I actually spoke my mind rather than trying to bring the attention to, you know, low of the many efforts and discussions and points and lectures and things over the years that From the Trenches had done. I took the stage for one final say, especially since I felt like having produced the show and kept it going for an additional 5 years after there had been something of a transition. The previous producer had actually produced the show for the last 8 years, and she had said, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And very likely the show would have ended there if nobody had stepped up to take that role. I was one of two people who did. And I helped to no small extent keep it going for another 5 years thereafter. And basically in the last 7 minutes basically said words to the effect of, I disagree with this. I feel like the reasons I've been told for why this is happening strike me as dubious at a minimum. And I actually read aloud the letter I received and broke it down sentence by sentence, saying, okay, this is what they say. No, this can't be right because. And doing that throughout. I could have put up more of a fight. I opted not to for a couple of reasons. One, basically personal. That actually freed up some time that I've since been able to use for other things. So, and in some perverse way, I was a little bit grateful that I had a little bit of time freed up. That's one. Second thing was, it is a grind. And especially where, here's the thing, having been involved in media activism in one capacity or another for going back to 2002 is what I'll say, so 14 years now almost, and where there have been epical changes since then, I think the time has come that I've got to do something different with the window of opportunity that we have now. We're in, and I'm going to quote another media scholar here, Bob McChesney, who I actually have had on From the Trenches a number of times, and who himself actually was the host of a radio program that actually aired out of the WILL AM 580 out of Urbana, the NPR affiliate. He actually had an hour show every Sunday for 10 years out of the NPR affiliate in Urbana. This was no mean feat. And in fact, he could have kept it going. And he wrote a book, among many books, because he's a professor of communications, and his job is, among other things, writing books. So one of the books he wrote was Communications Revolution, I think is the title of it, mm-hmm. Critical Junctures. The idea being that every so often in history, maybe once a generation, the planets align. You get a chance because all of the pieces necessary for impactful societal change come together all at once. And this is actually a name for this among historians and people who research this. It's called the critical juncture. It's when the fact that societal change and maybe even changes generally don't necessarily happen in a linear fashion. Sometimes they can be very dramatic and very impactful. So a lot can happen in a very little amount of time. And we are in one of those critical junctures now. All the pieces are in play for it. Certainly regarding media, where you need to have a technological window, a societal window, and a political window. And we are lucky that we have that. Technology, the internet, society, journalism, basically, is in deep arrears. I mean, it's a complete mess, as ask any working journalist or former journalist. I mean, our journalism institution has been basically eviscerated. Kind of dovetails into what's going on with Gannett and Tribune, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Yes, we will. Yes, definitely. Yeah. We will.
And we are. There is also now widespread political ferment, to the extent that you have movements that are, if not making, at least trying to make, and to some extent actually succeeding in making positive social change. You get all three of those, and this has been I don't know if that's even happened in American history. I don't think it's happened maybe in the last certainly the last century, maybe even going back to the year 1900. But this is a rare opportunity that we have now. And while it is important, and a lot of people, God bless everyone who still works on producing media and radio television content to help to get the word out. And Lord knows I spend a lot of time doing that myself. I've got to do more. I've got to do something else. And so this is kind of like I'm weighing my options, and I'm actually trying to figure that out now, figuring out what comes next. I'm actually, shortly this evening, I'm actually going to be meeting with a number of friends of mine where we're going to basically chew the fat and figure out one idea of how we can, one possible venue for, avenue or avenues for doing this. I've been corresponding via email with another friends on another project. I work professionally as a software developer. I'm very lucky that I have where people wanting to make or use the internet or computer technologies to instigate or promote or devise change on a wide scale, I'm very lucky that I don't have to ask anyone to do that. I can do that myself. So I'm very blessed and very grateful that I happen to pick a career that accords me to do that, especially now in this critical juncture. So then the question becomes, what do I do that's going to make the most impact? Especially where, and the digitization of our media is apace, and very much so. And so, and especially where the internet is having won the net neutrality fight, I'm thinking that fight is won, and we've now got the freedom, at least for the moment, on that. And the question now becomes, what do we do with that? What can I do with that? Especially where we need a lot more than just that. I mean, net neutrality is great, and I'm very glad we fought that fight, but the point of net neutrality should be that people can speak their mind and be heard, and people can organize among themselves and impact positive societal progress and positive social change.
And
win things, and things like that.
Like I said, I've just been, I have been falling down at the job being, like I said, I've been media celibate, not a media whore, like I usually am, so I haven't been up on, I listen to the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and read my New Republic, but I used to be all over the internet.
Right.
I would follow the issues and in like a gumshoe detective.
Mm-hmm.
But lately I have been spending, like I said earlier, I spend a lot of time on social media. Now, mm-hmm. I think, Mitchell, here you talk about a critical juncture. It's important. I'm kind of surprised. I'm kind of amazed and actually heartened. One of the things I'm heartened by is the body positivity movement it just seemed like it was overnight, but of course it wasn't overnight.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of struggle involved in the rights for gay folks.
It's like the old saying regarding Broadway, it took 10 years to become an overnight success.
Right, exactly. I think like with the struggle for marriage equality for people who are gay, to be able to have their partnerships recognized by the state, more consistently and honestly, and that people are, now it's so much more accepted than it was even 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, tremendous progress. And even like, remember in 2004, that was a wedge issue to try to get the Republicans to win in 2004. And it worked. They basically put anti-gay marriage amendments on 11, and the ballots in 11 states.
True.
To basically say, cause evangelicals or anti-gay bigots to come to the polls and vote in sufficient numbers to be able to win key battleground states, and to a great extent, it worked.
Yes.
Not a decade after that did we see not only, opposition laws being passed, not just civil union laws, which itself was considered like way outlandish,
right,
but marriage equality laws being passed in states, and then an array of court decisions that basically struck down each one of these anti-gay rulings state by state
it's been
until
like a domino effect.
Yeah,
it's
and
been
a tremendous
amazing.
Domino effect. But it was efforts that took a long time for a lot of people, a lot of whom we won't know, but whose efforts were absolutely critical to making this happen. And we saw it going from, gays are icky in 2004, so let's make sure that we put these anti-gay amendments on the ballot so that we Republicans are able to win in 2004 to their success. To not slightly 11 years later, when Obergefell v. Hodges, the Supreme Court case that overturned the last of the remaining anti-gay legislation and basically enshrined marriage equality in America, nationwide.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's like it went from this was impossible to it's happened.
Right.
That is great. That is encouraging, and that should be we should take encouragement from successes like that. Even with very impossible fights, you still got to fight them because you never know when the planets might align with you and things might happen. I've seen this many times, certainly in my own career as a media activist.
True.
I mean, going from the net neutrality fight. I mean, I'm talking with people who are like agreeing with me on every other issue. And I talk to them about this and like, oh, that's not going to happen. And it's like, okay, maybe it's not, but it doesn't mean you just, sitting your thumbs and not do anything about it.
This is true. Yeah.
It's like I spent a decade working on that and, then suddenly, February 2015, the FCC rules on it. And now, huge applause at that hearing, at the FCC meeting where they actually enshrined that. From a lot of people who were involved way more than me. I mean, I have a job that has nothing to do with media. This is kind of a hobby of mine, in quotes. But it's something I've worked on and trying to do. And, the people in that room know me. And I count that as a badge of honor that, I'm recognized for my efforts on that.
Well,
not by any means alone. Far from it. Oh, I wouldn't be able to win this fight alone.
No, of course not. No, and the thing is, I think a lot of it has to do with the power of social media. For good or for ill.
Yeah.
It is the voice of the people, and for good or for ill. And the thing, that's why advertisers like Unilever, are slurping down on it like big hungry vultures. Woo, there's a market segment there that's untapped. And but more importantly, there's also an impact by that because it has the potential. Or the actual has actually changed people's minds and hearts. I mean, when a YouTube video goes viral, that says something about where our culture is headed. Sometimes,
and it's not just viral, but happening quickly.
Quickly,
like in a matter of days,
or hours. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's almost like in quote unquote real time.
Mm-hmm.
But again, also for ill too, because bad things can happen as well with that level of speed of, misinformation can also be held for that too as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And that we saw this as part of that critical juncture here where these changes are occurred. Now, will we have that freedom going forward? Will, corporations consolidate among themselves, at least in the political sphere? And, will those of us who are working on trying to better our media environment and maybe the world generally be able to succeed in our efforts in this rare opportunity that we have, the critical juncture, which how long do these last? Nobody knows. Ballpark, probably in the order of maybe a decade or less. Could be as little as 5 years.
True.
But the time is now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you think you don't have power. Far from it. You have a lot more power than you know.
And a lot of consumer dollars. I mean, and where you put your money is where you... there's some people who say, and I think this is a good adage. I don't think this is far from the truth. That however you spend your money is where you what you value.
Vote with your dollars.
Yeah, vote with your dollars. Yeah. And I guess I'm sorry to go back to the Donald Trump as I call him Donald Trump as
Trump as.
The reason why I call him Donald Trump is because
I call him Drumpf.
No, there was
but Trump as. Why do you call him Trump as?
I remember he's a Atlanta. He's American. He's a Mexican American who is a comedian who is Lopez. He does.
Oh, George Lopez.
George Lopez.
Yeah.
Both sides of the border. So he's amazing. And he did a parody of the Donald Trump as if he were a Mexican president. and the name of his candidate was Donald Trump. So I call him Donald Trump.
Okay, then.
And also because I read a very interesting, an op-ed, but an opinion piece in the New York Times Sunday Magazine a few months ago about how Donald Trump reminded him of other cult of personality Latin American leaders of the last 30 years or so.
Right.
Like Perón.
Right. Vicente Fox in Mexico,
yeah,
Perón.
Et cetera, et cetera. And he's like the big padrón, you know, is going to take over and he's going to have his way and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
All right. And will the trains run on time? I don't think so. Not in Washington. One other thing I wanted to mention before I forget, before it flies off the buffer here.
Yeah.
One of the calls I had asked about Columbia College's radio station. They do have one. It is WCRX, and they are just a few doors down to the right of the dial. They are Chicago's underground radio.
And they're also a very small signal.
I don't think
you can probably hear it unless you happen to be, at least on the air, unless you happen to be downtown.
Yes. And the other thing about it is you can, but they do have a stream on the internet.
Right. And a lot of stations do, and so that's good.
And that is a good thing. A lot of good college stations have streams on the internet.
Yeah,
and a lot of college stations, going back to your experience with Loyola, I don't really think completely bad about Loyola, but the thing is, that there is some controversy about the direction that the whole university is going in terms of how it is taking over Rogers Park.
Yes.
There is a lot of controversy about the real estate situation with the university and the appropriation of that. It's not without controversy. I'm not taking any stand on it because I don't have enough information. I definitely haven't researched it to have an opinion, but this is just part of that, the further corporatization of universities in general and how they're all kind of moving in that general direction because of the way things are in terms of academia.
The fancy word is neoliberalism. It's one reflection of it. Basically, that previously nonprofit and public institutions are, corporatized and privatized because, the dollar can't go wrong with markets, right?
Well, there's something to be said about that. I mean, I don't know if that's entirely the fault of neoliberalism. I don't know if that's really entirely true, although I will say that online universities is a perfect example of neoliberalism.
Okay.
I think definitely that is definitely something that we're starting to monitor.
It's not to say that, you probably have a point there, and I think you might be right there, that it's not to say that, the people who are making the decisions regarding, let's say, the gentrification of Rogers Park and the expansion of Loyola's North Shore campus are guided by the philosophy of neoliberalism directly. I think that they've got other things. It may be part of the background, and it may just be this is how it's going to happen.
Right.
I don't know if they're necessarily going to read, Milton Friedman's Capitalism and Freedom, for example, which a lot of people...
And here's a case study
No. Right. No. But it's probably part of the overall zeitgeist, the environment of ideas and opinions that are not only around you, but also that are considered to be respectable.
Or, the other thing is that the commodification of ideas.
Yes. Yeah, very true.
I think of WTTW as being a perfect example of that. I mean,
we're talking about Chicago's main PBS affiliate.
Yes, correctly. Correct. And I'm not saying I am for or against WTTW. I'm not saying anything horrible about it. I'm just saying what it is. I mean, if you go on to Channel 11, you'll see a lot of corporate sponsors.
Yep.
And there is no mistake about that. When we talk about media, we have to talk about how it is being, how we pay for it and where the dollars go and follow the money.
Yep.
And speaking of money, we're going to talk about the...
Gannett Tribune?
Yes.
We should talk about that. So this is all materialized just within the last month and change. So and is changing practically by the hour. So with a caveat of what I'm about to say could very well be out of date soon. The Gannett. Gannett, G-A-N-N-E-T-T, is, I think they are the largest newspaper conglomerate in America. Their most popular and widely known holding is the USA Today. our Tribune, yes. Tribune Publishing. Folks may not know this, but it turns out that the what had been Tribune Media Services, the Tribune Corporation, actually broke in two a few years back. In the wake of, actually, another thing I happen to have a little bit of, more than a little bit of credit to, Tribune gambled regarding the media ownership rules. They were hoping to become like another one of these big six media conglomerates, and the way they were going to do it was by buying up newspaper and TV stations around the country. Problem was, the law to do that never got passed. We blocked it in court and actually had succeeded in their plans. All their attempts, and they were actually leading the charge and trying to, like, repeated court appeals, failed. So they're now stuck. In the wake of that being stuck, what wound up was a grand unraveling that resulted in, and over the course of about a decade, the corporation, Tribune Corporation, basically being cleaved in two. On the one hand, you have Tribune Media Services. This is TV and internet for the most part, and Tribune Publishing. That's basically the print properties, including the Chicago Tribune newspaper and a number of other newspapers under their umbrella, like the Los Angeles Times, like the Hartford Courant, like the Orlando Sentinel, like the Baltimore Sun, and maybe a handful of other newspapers. Big names. And Tribune, last month, got a buyout offer from Gannett to the tune of $815 million. Now, a lot of money. Here's the thing, though. By standards of media, this is chump change. Small example, Facebook bought out the WhatsApp application that's used for communications worldwide for $19 billion. Mm. Mind you, WhatsApp, at the time of the buyout, had a grand total of 55 employees.
Right.
They were very effective in what they were able to do with a relatively small company. Facebook redeemed it as so much of a threat that they were able to pony up $19 billion. They could have bought the Tribune more than 38 times over with the amount of money they shelled for one app.
Right.
I mean, it's a big app and regarded among the top three.
About the valuation of newspapers.
Right. And that's exactly what my point is. I mean, where Jeff Bezos, the CEO and head of Amazon, spent like a fraction of $1 billion just to buy one newspaper, the Washington Post. He now owns the Washington Post.
Really?
Yep. Yep. The head of Amazon now owns the Washington Post and has actually for a number of years. But you see the point here is that newspapers have fallen to such a small level that this, you know, by the standards of billionaires, these are now small potatoes. Gannett submitted a bid for $815 billion. Tribune rejected it in about a week, saying, "We're worth a lot more than that. Goodbye." Gannett came back saying, "Okay, we'll offer another $50 million. We'll make it $865 million. Tribune laughed that out of their boardroom and said, "No, thank you." Now we're seeing a number of things happening. Gannett could well come back a third time, maybe with a bigger offer. And they're just trying to play this incremental game where they're just saying, okay, when's the point at which the fish will bite the bait? And they may just do this, and maybe the next one go around, or they may just do it another four or five times,
wow.
Who knows? At the same time, the Tribune is now facing opposition among its own shareholders, saying, look, this is crap. We're clearly in a market that's depressing. Look at the value of the Tribune Publishing, even in the time since we've broken away from the Tribune mothership.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, and you're turning down an offer where you could get a buyout for a comparatively large sum of money, especially given that, you know, if you don't buy out now, you may come to regret it later.
Are you saying that they're like, that some members of the board are trying to hold out from the
shareholders, not board members, but some shareholders are now making noises regarding saying, "We're going to get lawyers involved and sue you because you're not taking these offers."
Oh.
Because we're saying that we think that you're making a big mistake. And as shareholders,
yes.
We're in charge.
I got you.
Yeah. So that's what's now happening. And that's the thing here. It's like what I'm describing is basically things that have occurred in the last week as we're talking now on June 5th, 2015.
Why am I not surprised by that?
But it's like, and that's the thing there. We don't know exactly where this is going to shake out. It could well be that, you know, Gannett could well complete their buyout. They may well buy it out. The FCC and the FTC may just say, "Oh, just go ahead. Nobody cares." because
right.
these are media
it's just
outlets
a big
that are
paper now.
Yeah. It's like you're going to be lucky if you're going to be lucky if these companies are going to even exist in 5 years' time.
Well, and I don't mean to say that of the venerable Chicago Tribune. It's a hinky dink paper. But I mean, in relative terms to what is being paid for media, those are hinky dink.
Yeah. By compared to $19 billion for WhatsApp.
No badness directed to the Tribune for its the journalism.
But the fact is, though, that they're in an industry that is, to be blunt about it, dying.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's going the way of the horse and buggy, my
this
friend.
I blogged about this yesterday on the Chicago Media Action website. You can read about it at chicagomediaaction.org. The point I raise is not so much that the industries come and go, because industries have come and gone across America throughout history. My point is that regarding journalism, the Tribune and other commercial entities have basically hidden and bankrolled the institution of journalism for the better part of 150 years
True.
Until the internet has come along. And that means, and that's now, that subsidy, that commercial subsidy of the institution of journalism is now going away. And that doesn't mean that journalism itself should go away. Far from it. We should have more journalism. We should strengthen it, but not through a commercial mandate. Not only because it's not happening, but also because it shouldn't be that way. We should have, as other countries have around the world, nonprofit subsidies. In fact, one easy way of doing this, I mean, there might be a controversial there regarding government involvement in media production. That's a very valid concern. Here's a very simple proposal you could use to have your cake and eat it too. The idea would be this. Offer a tax write-up. Dean Baker, who's an economist, offered this idea. Offer all Americans a $150 tax write-off to any media outlet of their choice. So they can fund, so it's like now suddenly you've got an injection of what could be billions of dollars a year for institutions that do journalism. And you don't have to worry about government involvement because government isn't paying for it. It's being chosen by taxpayers. And the money, the money will be there to fund it. And you don't have to worry about, the necessary government involvement because, they're just setting up the mechanism for facilitating it happening. They're not calling the shots, and certainly wouldn't call the shots to outlets that receive such money. Mm-hmm. But it would accord the money to be able to pay journalists to do good work, to be able to report on, as I finished the blog post, news is what someone wants suppressed. Everything else is advertising.
Well, very well said, Mitchell, and passionately so. And so, yeah, that's why you are sitting here.
Thank you.
That's why I invited you.
I'm always honored, that.
It's always an honor for me to be here with you, but also to be on the air for us to be discussing these ideas.
Very much so.
In public.
Thank you to WZRD and thank you for listening to
our
listeners.
Listeners, and thank you to the Northeastern Illinois University and to all the powers that be that allow us to do this, because it's not going to happen if we don't take initiative. And, basically just, take ownership.
It's like I always say, freedom is just another muscle. Use it or lose it.
Right. exactly. And the other thing is, I'm not sure if that's an interesting solution. The other issue has to do, here's my conspiratorial mind working, but, maybe this is intentional.
What's intentional?
The intentional destruction of muckraking journalism and the erosion of the media or journalism to be that, what is it, the fifth column?
The fourth estate. Fifth column refers to, it's actually a reference to the Spanish Civil War,
but basically refer to
people on the inside who are rebelling against the institutions they're a part of. That's the fifth column. The fourth estate is what you're referring to.
Fourth and fifth. I get them mixed up.
That's okay.
But thank you for correcting me.
No problem.
So the fourth estate. Yes, the fourth estate that that has been a bulwark of our democracy since its inception, at least this iteration of it, never mind the first people's version of it that were here before us.
Right.
But the last significant during the last couple of centuries form of democracy that you and I know about, that has always been, like, I was, like, there has been a lot, Tocqueville talked about the importance of newsletters and newspapers to the process of dissemination of information and influencing yeah. ideas and actions.
You're referring to the French writer and philosopher Alexis de Tocqueville.
Right, mm-hmm. who wrote, you know, about his years.
Democracy in America, is his landmark work.
And he did mention this as a venerable institution, a bulwark, a column, if you will,
mm-hmm.
of our democracy. What holds it all together is the ability to get the information necessary
yep.
so that people can vote in the correct way, not in the
not
way.
And true, and not more than just voting.
More than just voting,
yeah.
but actually taking action, actually lifting understanding and consciousness, you know, elevating like the civil rights
mm-hmm.
or the anti-war movement,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
The environmental movement.
Yep, yep. Occupy
the,
Wall Street, Black Lives Matter.
Yes, all of the things
yep.
that we need to have as a corrective to thing to you know, maybe the our lesser nature, as it were. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not as eloquent as you are about this, but you get the point. And that's what we're addressing here. And you know, with this takeover, I have a feeling that if it does go to court in a big way, it might stall. But I think you have a point that the momentum is for Gannett maybe to take over the Tribune.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'll have to see how this shapes out. But yeah, my guess would be Gannett will probably win it'll probably be a dance that may well take months or years. I'm guessing they'll probably, if they're willing to be this involved in it, and especially if the Tribune may well face opposition from their own ranks,
mm-hmm.
I may well think that they'll probably just buy it out. And
it
then
may,
and then
not, yeah,
for an industry that will probably die in the next decade or so.
Well, I don't know.
Not to say that journalism should. I mean, there's a difference between newspapers and journalism,
true.
To be sure.
True.
One would hope that the institution of journalism itself is, you know, strengthened, and this is one what I suggested as a proposal. Is one way to do it, but there are plenty of others. And
well, the companies, the vertically integrated companies, like I'm going back to the Wall Street Journal. You know, the vertically integrated ones have content that you can get all over the internet.
Paywalls.
Payrolls. I mean, there's so much ways of getting the necessary content. It's fantastic. I mean, it's
mm-hmm.
just amazing. So I see there is a future, but it's not going to be the one that, you know, we thought we'd have with it. I don't think it's dying. I think it's just transforming into something
yeah,
else.
That's my hope here. And you're right. I think we're seeing signs of it transforming. I mean, like, for example, I mean, I always mention this one critical example, The Intercept. This is a project, you look it up at theintercept.com, an entirely online resource, serious journalism efforts. I mean, maybe as serious as you'll find on the internet in the English language. And it was spearheaded basically as a result of the efforts, to no small extent, of Edward Snowden, a whistleblower regarding the National Security Agency.
Would it be called Project Intercept?
No, it's known as The Intercept,
okay.
theintercept.com. And that's a serious journalism effort. Glenn Greenwald is basically its lead, getting a serious chunk of money from Pierre Omidyar, who had basically founded eBay, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, the founder of eBay bankrolled The Intercept and basically saying, okay, here's whatever the amount of money was, probably in the order of $250 million. Go out there, tell the stories that aren't being told, dig up the dirt, and get it out there. And they're using it as an internet resource. And they maintain, or one of the partners involved with keeping the Snowden archive. They've got the archive of data that Edward Snowden provided out as his leak.
Wow.
Yeah, that I mean, certainly in 2013, when that leak hit, it took over. And it was just so heartening to hear. It's like, yes, journalism can make a difference. Whistleblowers can make a difference, and it has made a difference, and it's still making a difference.
And that's what we're all trying.
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to do.
I mean,
here.
Few of us are as far and received the position of Edward Snowden is. But to be fair, Edward Snowden is now in exile for his life. right now in Russia.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, now it's hard to think that Russia would be a bulwark of freedom, but in this curious case, they are.
Well, have you, speaking of media and content, have you ever checked out anything on Russia Today or anything like that?
A little bit. Yeah, not something I have a whole lot of experience with, but some.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a gander anyway. Mm. I'm not promoting it. I'm just saying it's worth a gander.
Yeah.
All right.
But you see my point here is that this is one effort of a lot that are trying to make do with what's going on here and trying to, you know, create a new model.
I mean,
the other thing about this is, okay, so you've got to have a sympathetic view who found a guy who founded a major internet website, eBay, and got billions of dollars for it and spent a serious chunk of the money to found that. Well, most of us don't have that privilege to do that.
No, but it's it does say.
I mean, maybe
there's some millionaires who aren't so bad.
That's true, and no. I mean, they understand that they'll make their money and then try to do good things with it, and it's far better than an alternative where I'm going to make money and I'm going to keep doing it and I'm going to step on your face the whole time.
Yes, and you know that's sort of like a dog chasing its tail. In the end, you don't mm-hmm. really make the money anyway.
Yeah, certainly.
Their karma, instant karma, will come and get you.
Yes.
That is true. All right. Hey, Mitchell. Yeah, okay. It looks like we're going to have to transition.
It looks like we're done?
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have to transition to our next wizard with a totally different, musical,
Taste,
everything. That's just the cool thing about...
Yeah. No, that's great.
But yeah, I just wanted to say I am going to. I'll invite you back, in a few weeks, and we'll just update, and we'll just do this every so often.
Sure.
Not make it a regular thing because we don't have regular programming here, but just enough to sort of keep in touch and
absolutely
keep the balls rolling and keep my balls rolling because the machinations inside my little brain that are hungry for knowledge, just, trying to get everything together here and also to pay attention to what's really happening. Maybe, I'm thinking that maybe we should get together sometime in the fall or closing in on the general election time and then maybe after. So sort of maybe quarterly or something like that.
Totally.
Quarterly-ish. Mm-hmm. All right, good. And then let's just go, Mitch, I'd like you to go through one more time all the things you're involved in, just so people can follow up on their own. And I'll just say before you do that, it's called TheIntercept.com. That's TheIntercept.com.
Yep.
Intercept. And it is, I'm looking at this website right now as I'm speaking, and I am like, whoa, yeah. I'm frothing at the mouth. It looks really good.
Yeah.
Good content here.
Yeah. So that's one resource. I'm not affiliated with it. I've met Glenn Greenwald, who's its basically general manager and probably lead columnist.
Okay.
Cool guy, and I like his work.
All
right. I myself am involved with a number of projects. There's Chicago Indie Media, the Chicago Independent Media Center, online at chicago.indymedia.org, mm-hmm. and with Indie Media spelled I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A. There's Chicago Media Action, a group that's been around now 13 years, all coming up on 14, online at chicagomediaaction.org, as well as a Twitter feed. Twitter handle is @ChiMediaAction, C-H-I Media Action. My personal website is www.szcz.org, which actually earlier this year underwent a significant technical and content upgrade. So I'm happy to report that that was long overdue and made that happen. So first four letters of my last name, .org, or just Google Mitchell Stepinchuk, and try not to get carpal tunnel syndrome.
Just type in
S as in Sam, Z as in zebra, C as in cat, Z as in zebra.org.
Yes,
there we are. And a TV show I helped produce, Chicago Independent Television, which you can see at a number of places, in Chicago Indie Media's website or at YouTube, our youtube.com/CIMC, or in Chicago on Chicago Cable Channel 19, CanTV, on the first and the third Monday of the month at 11 p.m. And also on Free Speech TV on National Satellite on weekends. I would advise people to go to the website freespeech.org or look on their registry if you have a subscription to DirecTV or Dish Network. and look it up there. But yeah, that's some of what I do.
And that's quite a bit. All right, Mitchell, thank you so much for coming onto our station. It is always an honor and pleasure to be serving you, the greater WZRD listening community. We are now going to be transitioning to the next wizard who will take over the helm here. And we're going to go back to our wonderful Lawrence Welk-ish grunge music to do that. And then, of course, the music will change and get remarkably different and possibly better. With that thought in mind, Mitch, it's been a pleasure. We'll talk in just a second.
Yep.
And so thank you, everyone. Let me just cue this puppy up. And yeah, sometimes I get caught unawares. Oh, well. This is, after all, an amateur effort here. We're all volunteers here. All right, so let's listen to some more grunge. Let's see. Let's try this piece. It's track number 8. It's called Swallow My Pride. Ooh, I'm excited. Here we go.